The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome into the Blackhawks Talk Podcast. I'm Slavko Bekovic, and we've got a special guest on this episode. 29 years ago, Wayne Mesmer sang the most incredible national anthem at the 1991 All-Star Game at Chicago Stadium. Wayne joins us on the podcast to talk about that day, what memories stand out the most about him, and the reaction of not only the fans, but military people and former players that day changed the rest of their lives, and it certainly changed Wayne's life. That's coming up next on the Blackhawks Talk Podcast.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
For those who don't know the backstory, the 1991 All-Star Game took place at Chicago Stadium in the NHL on January 19th of 91, just 2 days after Operation Desert Storm essentially kicked off in earnest the Gulf War. There was a lot of controversy about the game. There was questions from very prominent NHL players, including Wayne Gretzky, the great one himself, saying that the game shouldn't be played, it should be canceled because the players felt it would be a shame to be on the ice having fun while the military was out there essentially putting their lives on the line. There was an anticipation for the game once it was announced that it will continue on. And on that night, Wayne Mesmer sang one of the most memorable national anthems in sporting history. It's something that Chicago sports fans know very well, something the Blackhawks fans certainly know very well. Wayne has sang the national anthem in Chicago for over 30 years now, was a member of the Blackhawks, singing it for 13 years. Chicago Stadium, the Madhouse on Madison, was known for how loud it got and how imposing it was to other teams. But this anthem in 1991 was Mesmer's perhaps crowning moment, the moment that introduced the national audience in the United States to the tradition that Blackhawks fans still have now of cheering the national anthem. And it's something that almost 30 years to the day still remains a huge moment in Blackhawks history. Here is the audio of that 1991 All-Star Game carried around the country and Wayne Mesmer's rendition of the Star-Spangled Banner.
Oh, say can you see by the country light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous night.
We're joined now by Wayne Messmer, the singer of many national anthems here in Chicago, but perhaps most notably that 1991 All-Star Game at Chicago Stadium. Wayne, thank you for joining us. And before we get to the 91 All-Star Game, I want to know first how you got into music, how you got into performing and singing, and when you realized, you know what, I think I have a special voice.
Well, it's probably high school, and I was a French horn player, and somehow finagled my way into a part in the musical and faked it. You know, I pretended like I could sing. I imitated. Why doesn't somebody just sing like this, you know? And then you have a little bit of success, and somebody takes you under their wing, and you get actual training. So through college, singing with different groups and big bands, and you know, also looking out at a nice audience while you're singing in an auditorium, recognizing that you know, some of the co-eds looked at you differently now. There's a benefit going on there.
So you used your voice to woo the ladies a little bit.
You got to. We have to use all of the all of the attributes that we possibly can, like a peacock, you know, fluffing the feathers. But that led to some cool opportunities. And during graduate school, I was announcing the because nobody was announcing the Loyola University hockey games, and so buddies of mine were on a team. I was going to most every game. I said, "I'll just do the PA announcing. What the heck? That'll be fun." So, you know, I kind of hopped in the penalty box and took over the gig out in Franklin Park. And one day we got a Kate Smith cassette recording, and I hit it, and it went, whoa, it just ate it up.
It's never a good sound.
And so all the guys are looking around, and you know, the coach is going, well, what do we do? Relax, I'll just sing the song. So, you know, I sang it, and that was the very first time that I had ever sung it publicly. And of course, all the guys are going, you know, giving me, you know, the sticks and all that. Man, I didn't know you could do that. Yeah, I guess I can. So, and didn't think anything of it. But opportunities then came through radio and just, you know, getting to know other people. You know, I was hired by the White Sox for 3 years and then the Cubs eventually, but the Blackhawks for 13 years. So I was well into that tenure. On January 19th of 91, which unbelievably was a day that I don't think will ever possibly not live in my heart.
I think when most people think of a Wayne Messmer anthem, I think everyone remembers the way you sing that final word, the way you sing the word brave. And I don't know a thing about music. I couldn't read music if you paid me to, but apparently it's that fifth note in the word brave. When did that become your staple?
It happened kind of accidentally, but it did happen at a Blackhawks game. Back in my era, when I was I would sing up in the organ loft with the gigantic mighty Barton Theater organ. And, you know, everyone is looking at me, at the singer, you know. And a friend of mine was there, another musician, and it just felt right. You know, bum ba ba bum 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 bum. And hold it. I was like, whoa. And then I was with the White Sox at the time. And singing it at a ball game, it didn't seem right. But then all of a sudden, somebody says, no, you should probably, you know, do that, because that has a nice ending to it, even though it ends musically on the dominant, the fifth, instead of, like you pointed out, instead of resolving to the tonic. But not too many people, you know, are too concerned that the chord doesn't resolve.
So you're stuck
with it.
So you're saying the Chicago Stadium and the atmosphere might have actually had a way in kind of changing the way you did your performing?
No doubt. Yeah, because you can't help but get juiced up while you were there. The stadium was a, you know, people who have never been there don't know. I mean, you just don't know. Unless you were there, yeah, you could talk about it, but you don't know. It was 110 decibels at one point with the volume. That's the equivalent of a jet plane taking off. So it was pretty wild. And the emotion, I think, was was real. It was certainly real at that time around the All-Star game. We were a day and a half after suddenly the Gulf War had begun, and nobody knew, and people were very afraid of, geez, now what? You know, now what? And so it was a genuine show of patriotism, more so than just making noise for noise's sake, that's for sure.
Now, there are a number of stories of how the tradition started with the Blackhawks fans cheering the national anthem, but I think most people credit the 1985 playoffs, Hawks down 2-0 against the Oilers. You obviously would know better than most. Is that when you credit that anthem and tradition starting?
You are correct, sir. That's it. That is it. Any other stories are not true. I mean, that's all there is to it. It had been a little noisy when Hawks had played Vancouver, perhaps the year before or even in 83. But it was really that games three and four of that series, the conference finals against Gretzky and the gang from Edmonton, where it began. And it was not only where the cheering started much earlier or right at the beginning of the song, but a weird sense within the stadium during the O Canada, the Canadian anthem, is like a grumbling anticipation. I mean, it was weird. And that went away, but the cheering during the Star-Spangled Banner stuck.
Do you consider the 91 All-Star Game the country's kind of initiation and introduction to the Blackhawks anthem tradition?
Yeah, for sure. Because it was a few weeks earlier, there was a game on that was televised nationally from the stadium, and the decision was do not carry the anthem. And it was there was a kind of a pushback, especially from the fans. So when they announced that NBC was going to cover both anthems, it was like a challenge to the fans. Let's show them how it's done here. And the signs and the flares and the sparklers and all of that. It was Twilight Zone surreal, and you kind of had to pinch yourself that this is really happening. And trying to get through that as a vocalist isn't easy, because you've got a huge emotional lump in your throat. You want to be a part of that. But you're the guy who's got to light the wick.
Did you have trouble making it through the anthem because of the emotion and that moment? Were you able to, at a certain point, even kind of savor it while you were singing?
I was certainly soaking it in. I have always, as I love to describe it, lived life with my eyes open. But I will tell you, it took enormous concentration, and I'm not saying, hey, how swell I am, but it's a technique of concentrating on technique, on breathing, on supporting, and not shouting, not screaming, and not trying to get louder because the crowd is getting louder. The weird thing that people don't recognize is that people say, "Boy, I could hardly hear you at the last eight bars or whatever." And that's maybe very true. But I'm holding the microphone right up to my chops, and I'm singing. And it's a direct feed into the broadcast lines. And so they're picking up if you're over-singing or screaming and trying to overpower the crowd. So it does take a lot of concentration. It took a lot of concentration to sing the Soviet anthem in Russian, too, which I had done. And the same year, because it's out of the ordinary. You know, it's one thing to sing; it's one thing when there's a 16,000 Mack trucks heading towards you.
Take us through the lead up to the All-Star Game. Obviously, you mentioned Gretzky earlier. There was some players that said, and he was very outspoken at the time, that the game should have been canceled because of Desert Storm. How did you find out, one, that the game was still going on? How did you find out that you'd be singing? And then in the days leading up to it, you mentioned that you found out that there would be the national coverage of both anthems. Did that put any additional pressure on you? Just take us through the lead up, the days ahead of that 1991 All-Star game.
Yeah, it's interesting. I knew several weeks ahead that I would be singing and that we'd be hosting it. And so I was really, really looking forward to that. It was great. And, you know, complimented by that. It was a nice privilege, to say the least. But it was on Thursday night, which is when the first shots were fired in that initial Gulf War encounter. And I remember we're having dinner, and I'm thinking, whoa, this is interesting. And, immediately you're thinking, well, they're probably going to cancel the game or something. What's going to happen? Well, somehow the word got out pretty quickly that the game was going to be played. And, then you can't help but think, these are great moments in our lives where what we are gifted to do, and I mean that not in an ego sense, but the talents that we are God-given gifted and what we are requested to do when they meet in the same intersection. And I knew that was one of those moments. You know, it's like, if it's ever supposed to be done right, that's probably it.
Do you consider that your best performance of the national anthem?
No, because I don't know. I don't think I've ever done it. I'm never completely happy, even though I've done it probably 5,000 times. I was satisfied that I was able to take the handoff and carry the ball up the field and do it the way it's supposed to be done, which is still my favorite compliment when somebody says, "You sing the way it's supposed to be sung." Okay, thank you. You know, there were other more, I don't know if there were more emotional. That certainly is the most significant.
It's been 29 years since that game. Does it feel like it's been that long? And when you think back on it, is there one specific moment that stands out more than others?
Of that particular day?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. First of all, it doesn't seem like 29 years, but maybe 10, 15, 12, something like that. The moment that I remember more than anything was after completing the U.S. anthem and then just handing the microphone over to the electrician and stepping off of the platform, because I'd stand right there with the organist and really just starting to sob, you know, because then I could let it go. I could say, oh my God, you know, I mean, my hands were shaking because it was like, this is a memorable moment. Here's a great phrase that I love to use in, I do a lot of keynote speaking, corporate and this kind of stuff, and motivational and pretty solid, fundamental core value type of stuff. But I use this line and it applies here. Sometimes you will never know the true value of a moment until it becomes a memory. In other words, you didn't hit the record button. You know, you didn't absorb it and fully appreciate it. I assure you, I absorbed every single second of it. And then that emotional, you know, just being able to exhale after I was done. And my wife, Kathleen, was up there with me in the organ loft, and I just, you know, just hung on to her, and because there were sons and daughters who are now in combat situation, and their parents are listening and watching the game. That's who I thought of. I thought of, or the same with the Canadian anthem. That had to be done with as much reverence as the U.S. anthem. You know, I thought there's some small village in British Columbia or in Newfoundland or something, and they've got somebody in harm's way, and they needed to be respected and have their song done properly.
What was the first time that you were able to go back and actually watch the broadcast and watch the performance? Do you remember seeing it for the first time?
Yeah. That night. It opened and closed every local and national newscast. And, you know, like a good fellow, I was standing there with a remote in my hand and, going, this was something I'm never going to forget. And I got a feeling some other people might not forget it either. You know? But I really did. I understood the impact and the significance of the moment as it was happening and before it was happening. And then I was able to kind of celebrate and, be very grateful that I was able to do that.
How often do you have fans or maybe even former military, people in the service that come up to you and bring up that anthem specifically?
Constantly. You know, I was in Afghanistan, and I was in Iraq, I was in wherever I was. I went out of Afghanistan, I don't believe, but, wherever they were at the time. And because it was played on the Armed Forces radio service, and I got a handshake from General Schwarzkopf about this as well, who thanked me one day, kind of unsolicited, when I was singing at McCormick Place, and he was a speaker there. And he said, "Thank you for singing the song the way it's supposed to be sung when it needed to be done right." I mean, I'll never forget those words. And I said, I was like, "Whoa, you're welcome." So in other words, I think I got it. I think I got it. And when you can touch the hearts and souls of people by doing, again, what you are able to do pretty well at a time when it needs to be done well, that's unforgettable.
That night, Frank Pellico and his organ were right next to you at Chicago Stadium. What's your relationship like with him, and were you able to share any moments with him after you stepped off that platform?
I think we talked about it since, and I've always liked Frank, and we worked together for a lot of years. But he knew what it was, he knew the moment, and I think when I got up there and as the introduction was about to happen, I said, "This is going to be something," and we kind of looked at each other. I said, "Let's do this," and so. It was, it was a joint effort with the mighty Barton Theater organ. That was such a cool instrument.
We've seen you singing National Anthems of Chicago for a long time over different sporting events, different sports, but did you have, or do you have now, still some special connection or love for the game of hockey?
Yeah, I always have loved hockey. I'm a hockey baseball guy, and depending on the season, it's in that order. I grew up like any other kid playing slot hockey with my brother on one of those games, and we knew all the players and kept score and ran the full schedule, and could not believe the very first time I ever got to actually meet Stan Mikita or Bobby Hull, to become friends with guys who are your childhood heroes, whether it's hockey or baseball, it's pretty amazing, and it's a gift, kind of a byproduct gift that you get by hanging around and hopefully doing a good job. But hockey is such a great sport. It's a live spectator sport. It's tough, and I don't know. It's manly. It's a good one.
Since that 1991 All-Star Game, have any former players come up to you specifically about that anthem, or in general, just the way you sing it?
Yeah, I will. Well, now I'm involved with the American Hockey League team, the Chicago Wolves, and so many of the ex-players, former players, who are around during that era are now still in the game and scouting. And you know, you bump into them in the press room, and any one of them would say, "Man, I was there that day," or "I was on the ice," or whatever it may be. And that's about all they need to say, because if you've shared that experience, it's something that's kind of a bonding. And so there have been a number of guys that I've seen over the years, and whether it's at golf outings or one charity event or another. And, man, I'll never forget that All-Star game.
And Chicago fans will never forget it either. Wayne, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate the time. Best of luck the rest of the way. And this anniversary will be one. Next year will be 30 years. It's hard to believe. But this anniversary, that's one that sticks with Chicago sports, and that'll be there forever.
Yeah, it was special for all of us. So we'll talk again next year. Big 3-0.
Our thanks to Wayne Messmer for joining us on the Blackhawks Talk podcast. Some incredible storytelling and a memory that a lot of Blackhawks fans who were there or weren't there or experienced will certainly remember for a lifetime. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Blackhawks Talk podcast. If you like this episode, please go ahead, give us a rating, give us a review, wherever you get your podcast from, subscribe, and let us know what we can do to better serve you as a Blackhawks community. If you like this episode, make sure to go back and listen to some of our older episodes. Last week, Charlie Romeliotis went to Detroit to get an exclusive one-on-one with former head coach Joel Quenneville before he returned to Chicago on Tuesday to take on the Blackhawks as head coach of the Panthers. That's an incredible sit-down. You got to go back and listen to that. And, of course, all the other NBC Sports Chicago podcasts. For Wayne Messmer, I'm Slavko Bekovic. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.